My name is Tower. I'm the developer of HP Linux and open source lab. I come from China, and English is not my native language. So I would appreciate if you could speak slowly and simply when you ask questions. Thank you very much. And by the way, next week is Chinese Lunar New Year. Mouse is a zodiac animal for that year. So I put mouse here. And Happy New Year, yeah. Okay. So today I am going to talk about the virtualization NAND with Zen technology. When we talk about the Zen technology, we always think about the machines, physical machines that runs the many virtual machines. We may pay less attention to the environments where they are. And I will focus on the network configuration for the for the environment, talking about the devices and the relationship between the device and the machines. Okay. So this is the agenda. We have five sections. The first one is the Zen NIC devices. It's just the network cards and a virtual switch. We'll go through quickly because this is very basic knowledge. And then we'll try to build the network with these devices. That's the Zen and the network. We'll go through some useful topologies we will use by Zen technology. And then we'll talk about the deployment. Deploy Zen, the virtual machine with the correct network settings. We will compare some methods and see what's their advantages. Okay. Management and strategy is a further discussion about the deployment. We have summarized some methods, strategies we try to apply for to manage a lot of virtual machines. And finally, we'll shoot a real case as in the center. Okay. So first, the devices. Okay. Just the two. I group the devices into two categories. One is a virtual instance interface, which is provided by Zen itself. Another is the extended Ethernet interface. This part is actually a Linux kernel module. But it can enhance the network capabilities. We'll go details. So we have totally four special devices introduced by Zen. The first one is a PETH, which stands for physical Ethernet. It is a real interface that communicates the physical network out of the physical box. And second is Ethernet, which is virtual Ethernet. This device can be is shown in the domain, and the virtual interface VIF, VIF and the virtual Ethernet are a pair. It's like the two ends of a network cable. One end is Ethernet, virtual Ethernet, which is attached to the virtual machine, and the virtual interface is the another end attached to the Zen BR, which stands for the bridge. So Zen bridge actually is a link layer switch. You can think it just as a hub. So all the packets in the hub will be broadcast to all the virtual interface attached to it. And the packet flow is just talking about how the packet was received and routed to the domain. So the physical Ethernet receives the packet and will be forwarded by to the virtual interface by the Zen bridge. Since the virtual Ethernet is a pair of the virtual interface, so the domain N will receive the packets. Okay. This is another picture showing the layers about these devices. We have three layers. The first one is a physical LAN. LAN means local area network. And then we have the virtual LAN, which is composed by the bridge. And the virtual machines are running on it. So the virtual machine need to the virtual need the virtual network to communicate with the physical LAN. And the vertical LAN can communicate with the physical LAN. And also, if you use some NAT topology, it will not talk to the physical LAN. So it depends on your requirements and the configuration files. Okay. The extended interface is a kernel module. Two useful modules are bonding and dummy. Bonding means to combine two Ethernet cards, and they work together as if there is only one card. And there are two modes in bonding. The first one is load balance. That means two cards, both are active. It can double your bandwidth. For example, if you want to build 10 or more virtual machines, the bandwidth for one card maybe just 100 gigabyte. But if you use two cards, then it will be doubled to 200 gigabyte. Another mode is failover. That means one card will be active, another one will be standby. If the active one fails, the standby will be the active one immediately. So this will improve the network reliability. Dummy is a very interesting device. It's not a virtual device. It's not a virtual device because it has no relationship to the physical one. And it is also not the physical device either. But it can emulate the Ethernet. So somehow it's like the loop device. But loop device has a fixed IP address, 127.0.0.1. Many applications cannot run in a loop device, but dummy can help you. NAT is a very good example for dummy. We'll talk about later. And if you use Linux to dial up the ISP, dummy is also the device you need to use. Okay. Then we have know the devices. We'll use these devices to build up the useful topologies. The first one is a basic virtual network. It is a default configuration by Zen. That means you don't need to extra configuration. The second is extended virtual network. We'll introduce two topologies. Okay, one is multi-LAN. The second is NAT. So this is the default configuration in Zen. It is a bridge-only model. So all the picture on the left is from the perspective of network topology, and picture on the right is what's inside in the virtual machine. So you can think the left picture is a black box in terms of testing, and the right picture is a white box, so you can see what happens in the Zen. So in the bridge model only topology, we can find that all the machines, including the physical one and the virtual machines, are equal. That means they are just peers. they are the equal nodes in the local area network. So there's no difference between them and when we're talking about the network. So that means any clients or any machines can connect these machines directly without any special routing. Because all the virtual Ethernet are connected to the same virtual hub. The Zen Bridge Zero is a virtual hub. So packets received by the by the physical Ethernet will be broadcast by it to all the domains. That's why you just set up a virtual machine. It can and set up the IP address. It can talk to other machines immediately. This one is to build up multi-lens. So it's more complex than the previous one. Okay. Why we use multi-lens? Sometimes, for example, we are doing testing work for the JBoss clustering. So there are two cases for the test cases for the JBoss clustering. One is load balance. The other is failover. If we'll assign these tasks, the two tasks to two engineers at the same time, by default, the JBoss clustering, each node in the JBoss clustering will join the same group, the same clustering group. That means all the machines will talk together. So engineers cannot identify which one is his one. So the packets will go to the failover case and go to the load balance case at the same time. So that's a trouble. A good solution is to just to divide the machines into different lanes. But in our lab, we have only one local area network. So virtual machine is a good choice to solve the problem. So in this scenario, we need at least more than one physical Ethernet. Each one will connect to a different switch, and the packets will not be broadcast between the LANs, except you set up special routings to it. So this one is about the NAT topology. NAT stands for Network Address Translation. NAT is widely used by the firewall and the DSL dial-up in Linux desktop. So we can see all the machines, all the virtual machines behind the domain zero is invisible to other machines in the physical network. And inside the NAT network, we'll have another private network. I gave the example. One is the LAN has a network 10.0.0.0, and the net mask is just 255. And the NAT address is 192 and .168, and the mask is 255. So the laptop in the LAN cannot see domain 1 and domain 2 because the domain 0 is in front of it as a firewall. But inside the Zen, we can see we use a dummy device. The dummy device acting as the simulates the Ethernet. So domain 1 and domain 2 can talk to the domain 0, and we will use the IP table to route the data, to forward the data from physical Ethernet to the domain. Okay. Now we know some useful topologies. Maybe we have some more. But how to build them? Do you have any efficient ways? We have some methods to do this work. But before we talk about the methods, I'd like to introduce some three key steps. Okay. One is to create the image. Create image means to build up a virtual machine. As we know, virtual machines can run both on a physical partition or run in an image file. It is recommended to use the image file because image file is portable from machine to machine, and it is easy to copy and to manage. The configuration network means to configure the network in the guest OS, but there are two parts to configure. One is the to specify the virtual interface for the image file. That is a requirement by Zen. Another part is to configure the IP address inside the guest OS. So there are two parts. And then the third one is to boot the guest OS. The three key steps can be, and the order of the three steps can be varies. So we have four methods. So the first one is the from scratch. That means after we boot up the machine with the Zen kernel at the first time, we don't have any virtual machines. We don't have any guest OS. So it's zero. So we have to build up from scratch. If you use Red Hat or SUSE, it provides the user graphic interface to build up these machines very easily. You just click the mouse and follow the wizard. But in Debian system, it is more complex. You have to do it by yourself. You use dd command to create the image file, and you have to mount it, and use the Debian boot strap to boot the OS, the simple OS, and continue the installation. So that usually it will cost 1 hour to create an image. This is not efficient. But during the during the installation of the OS, you have a lot of flexibility. You can choose how many packages you want to install, and you can configure the network as you like according to your requirements. And then we boot up the guest OS. So this way is time consuming, but it is flexible. The second one will save some time because it is based on the method one. We just copy the image. We don't need to install it. And we boot up the guest OS. Then the configuration in the image will continue. So we have to configure the network inside the guest OS. This is a very normal way we copy the image and change the configuration. But it is not convenient to do the automation. If you suppose you have 100 images to copy and you want to change the network 100 times, that's not a good work. So the third method will configure the network before we put up the guest OS. After copy the guest the image file, we will do configuration. That means we need to modify the image file. So how will we modify the image file? You just mount the image. Yeah. and edit the configuration file under etc directory in the image file. So, there is one key note. It is recommended that you one image file contains only one partition, or you have to use a complex mount command to mount the partition inside of the image. The method four contains only two steps, just to copy the image and boot the OS. So where is the configuration? We use the external service. So we move the configuration in the external service. They provide the IP address. So what are they? So one is the DHCP service, the other is the DNS service. We pre-config the IP address and the MAC mapping in the DHCP server, and we also pre-config the hostname and the IP address inside the DNS. So when you boot up the guest OS, it will get the correct IP address from the DHCP. So almost in method four, it is zero configuration. So the summary is that method one is most flexible, and the method four is most efficient. Will you choose which one? Will you choose? It's not choose the best one. The method four. It's not because it has less flexibility. You have to register your MAC address in the DHCP server. If you have some other machines and to build a temporarily to build up a network, it's not a good idea to frequently edit the DHCP configuration. Because DHCP configuration will do some other, will serve other machines. So if you made errors in DHCP configuration, it may affect the whole network. So which one is better? It depends on the requirement. Now suppose we have 100 virtual machines. So what strategies will you use? Will you apply to manage them? So this is another topic about the deployment. So finally, we will we summarize four elements to consider. So the first one is the IP block management, and second, external service. They are the management of the IP addresses. It's relative to the network. Guest OS image management and the special function OS image is to manage the image repository. It's to manage the files. And the auto config scripts is the automation to do the deployment based on the methods we talk about. So IP blocks, when we build up a network, will be assigned a continuous IP addresses. We divided these addresses into three blocks. One is a DHCP with MAC binding. That means the machines can get the IP address by the DHCP without the expiration of lead time. So the host will always get the same IP. This is usually used for the server. The second is DHCP dynamical. That means the host will get the IP address by the DHCP, but it has list time, so maybe the IP address for this host will be changed. Usually this is for the laptops in the office network. And the static IP is to specify the IP address in the host, so it never changes and it never get help from the DHCP. This design of the IP blocks is to provide enough flexibility when we configuring the network in the virtual in the Zen environment. Okay. This example, this is how we do it in our lab. We have a A class network address. That's okay, 10.0.0.0. And we divide it into three blocks, 10.1, 10.2, and 10.3. Okay, that the TCP will, so in the three blocks, we have 64,000 hosts. That's enough to hold our machines. Since this A class address network address is too large, so we still have have a lot of IP addresses which is not used. This is on the in the black square. So external service. This is what we talk about, the DHCP and the DNS. Usually, DHCP and DNS are the IT infrastructure. So we try to balance it, and we don't build our private DHCP and DNS servers. The virtual machines and our laptop can share the same DHCP and a DNS server. Now let's move to the image repository management. So we have four dimensions to mention. The first one is the distro. That's Red Hat, SUSE, Debian, or some more. And version is a distribution version. And the arc is the distribution arc. It's different from the hardware arc, because we'll test the x86-64 and the i386 distribution on x86-64 hardware. So we differentiate the arc of the distribution. Another one is installation method. Installation method actually is specialized for our image. It means you can install the OS with the default package provided by the distribution, or you can install all of the image, all of the packages. Okay. Another one is the customer. That means you choose your own packages during the installation. Because in our lab, we have some project, some testing projects. Some of them will use the Max image. Some of them will use the customer image. With special function image repository. This image is not about the OS, it's about the application. For example, we are going to test the JBoss with the database connection. We care about the JBoss and the connection driver. We don't care about the database, especially the version or where did they run, we don't care. So we build up a image which contains the operating system and the database application. We just recover it, then we'll have a clean environment for the database. We can create the DB and the tables in a clean environment. It is very easy to recover. You can have some more special functional image. Okay. And if you use LVS, you can also add the image here. because LVS is a software that can do the layer 7 dispatch in Linux. It is not easy to configure. So you can put all such kind of applications in the image special functional image repository. So the last one is the auto config script. This is a program that we developed to automate the deployment. It has three components. The first one is a shell script, just a shell, very easy. And the second is templates. Templates actually is a Xen image configuration. Like you will specify the CPU. CPU number, memory, and hard disk, network configuration, and so on. We use templates. We just use the SED command to replace the values. So it will simplify our program. Another one is configuration. This is targeting the IP network configuration, such as the MAC address, IP address, net mask. Okay. The details for the configuration is in the blue square. So we have 7 elements. So the first one is distro name. Why we have a distro name? Because when you try to edit the image, you will because the image file has include different versions of the distribution, like Red Hat, SUSE, or Debian, and their network configuration is different. So you have to use different functions in the script to modify this network configuration. So we specify the distro name and the first beginning, and then we have the image path. Image path is just to pick up the images from our image repository. And template path is the template repository. We just pick up the template files. For example, the template files can be 1 CPU, 2 CPU, or 1 gigabyte memory, or 2 gigabyte memory. We just put it in the temporary path. And the NIC is a virtual interface you want to config. Currently, we only support ETH0, so that means we only support 1 Ethernet because we don't have some special requirement. Okay. And the IP address and net mask. Okay. If you don't specify IP address and net mask, you can use DHCP to replace it. And last one is the virtual hub device. That is Xen Bridge. So generally there are 2 kind of information. One is the OS information, the other is the network information. This program is just the shell script. It's based on the command line, and we hope that we could make it more user friendly. For example, to use the website to do the configuration and pick up the image files on the website. But now we have to edit manually. So this is not convenient, especially when you try to specify the files image like the image path or template path. If you make some errors, it doesn't work. Okay, finally, we'll shoot a real case. It's about our project. This project is to test the open source middleware stack on various Linux distributions. we'll test the JBoss, Apache, MySQL, and others. So we have a long test plan and need lots of machines. And the testing is not efficient. So we'll do some improvement. So first we'll look at our environment. So the hardware is we use one HP Blade P-class system, which is based on the x86-64, and we will run. The CPU is we have four CPUs, and 32 gigabyte memory and 72 gigabyte hard disk, and run the Slice 10 operating system with Zen version 3.0.2. We created nine domain U. Each of them has one CPU and 1 gigabyte memory and one Ethernet card. And this is what we did before, before we use the virtualization. Okay. So on the left, corner, we have a lot of physical machines. Usually, for one case, we need three machines for each distribution. This is machine cost. So at least we need nine machines and installing three distributions. And then we have automation testing server. That is where we the image where is the automation script is. We put all the testing case, test plan, and the programs on this test on the automation testing server. It will deploy these programs to the system under test. That is in the left corner, okay. And then we have the install server. When the automation script was deployed on the system under test, it will try to install operating system. And the software packages remotely. And DHCP and DNS is the infrastructure. So in this picture, we can see the installation is very difficult because we will install the OS and also the software. That's it's more complex, and we need lots of machines. So we did some improvement. We introduced the Zen technologies, especially for the we build nine domain U. Each of them install the different the three distributions. So this is an emulation for the physical environment. Since the image contains the operating system, so we don't need to install it again. And we will also put our software packages in the image, so we don't need to install the package again. So finally, the install server only contains the custom images. So from this point, we also reduce our program complexity. And so in this picture, we can see we save time. We save the program complexity, and we save hardware machines. This is because here we don't need too much NAT topology or the multi-LAN topology. We just use the default topology. So the networking is not complex. Generally, this is a good solution in our testing, and it's very successful. Okay. So that's all. Do you have any questions?
Okay.
You mean the,
you're testing something. I was just wondering what that is.
Okay. Well, actually, we do. We have a project called the Open Source Middleware Stack. It's testing like the JBoss, Apache, and the database MySQL. We'll test the connection, the connectivity of this middleware stack in HP's hardware. So we need a distributed environment. That's why we need more than one machine to do the test. We need to install all the applications on different machines. Do I answer your question?
Are you running anything on the JBoss? Are you testing anything in the JBoss? Or just making sure the JBoss works?
We'll have applications. It is a testing application that will to test the feature of JBoss. For example, the JBoss clustering, especially the body replication. How you test the body replication? We need some application to know if the JBoss has to replicate the data from one node to other nodes. Pardon me?
You can run 9 DOM U's. If you run 10, is it too slow?
No. Actually, we don't care about the currently, we don't care about the performance. So we just care about the features. We will use some other machines to do the performance testing. So here, this scenario is for the feature test. So all the test plan is based on that. No.
For each distribution, a specific DOM U kernel for the distribution, right?
Okay, I see. Actually, we install the different distributions with Zen kernel, and we build up the image files in that platform. Then we port we copy the image to our to this Linux, to this Zen Linux. For example, we install slash 10, we install Red Hat 5, and we'll build up the image file on the two distributions, and then we copy the images to this server, and we will boot the images. We boot the guest OS, use their own kernel inside the image files. You can specify the kernel image file in the configuration. So, for example, if you use slash 10 to build up Red Hat, that's or Fedora, it's not easy, you know. Yes.
Have you uncovered any bugs? Has your testing produced any results?
You mean for the results for what? For
with all of this much testing.
Uh-huh.
You must have uncovered some problems or some errors or some bugs.
Oh yeah. yes, we have. For example, the JDK, it cannot run correctly in the slash 10 x86-64 platforms. It will throw exceptions. It's about JDK version what?
1.5.
1.5, yes.
About
0.9. Okay, 1.509. So we have submitted this bug to some microsystem, and because this is relative to the kernel, Linux kernel, so we have to wait and until they give us the patch. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
So we have, I'm going to give Shane here about 5 minutes to set up. So I built in a little time in the schedule here. Okay, so he's ready. So this is Shane Owensby, and he's going to talk about the Oracle Virtual Machine.
Great, thanks.
How's that? Happy Australia Day. It's good to be back in Australia. I've been to the 3linux.conf.au's. Funny enough, working for 3 different companies and living in 3 different cities when I came to those, as strange as that may sound. So back in the one, it was in Sydney in 2000-something another. The one that was in Adelaide, and then obviously now here. So I flew in from Singapore this morning, so if I'm a little jet-lagged, you'll please forgive me. So my name is Shane Owensby. Thanks for the introduction. I cover Linux and open source for Oracle, covering all of Asia-Pacific. I spent the last 4 years at Red Hat, was at CollabNet before that, and was at IBM before that, all doing open source stuff. So I've been, those of you that have been running Linux for a long time, that's the easiest I've ever connected a projector to any machine in my life. Which I'm running now, I'm running a Mac, it's an interesting aside. Anyway, so I'll be presenting tomorrow on Linux, the Unbreakable Linux program. So what I'm talking about today is just Oracle VM. So if you can limit your questions to our virtualization offering, if you have those, then that'll be great. Happy to have an interactive session so we can go back and forth from there. Okay, so what do we announce? You're obviously a techie audience, so I'm going to cut to the chase and try not to, you know, give you a whole bunch of stuff that you really care less about. All right, free virtualization offering. Free as in beer, those of you who are keeping track. You can download it, you run it. If you want support from it, you pay Oracle. Okay. One interesting thing about it, this is the only software virtualization offering that is supported by Oracle. In a sense of, if you want to run the Oracle database and other virtualization offerings, that's great, but you have to reproduce your problems on physical hardware. In this offering, since we have the source code for everything, in a sense, source code for the hypervisor, source code for Unbreakable Linux, source code for our database, source code for our middleware, apps, etc., we will fully support you in a virtual environment on this. And I've got the programs that are actually supported and already certified in Oracle VM. Now, you may ask yourself, what's underneath the covers? Okay, when we talk about it, we talk about Oracle VM. We don't say that it is Xen on top of our version of Linux. Okay, our version of Linux is a bit, I'll explain that ad nauseum tomorrow, but imagine Red Hat Enterprise Linux sans the trademarks and copyrights, trimmed down to a server distribution that only needs to support what we need in a virtualized environment, and that's the version of Linux that we're running underneath. Okay, those of you that are thinking, is Oracle leeching from the community, or are we giving back? All right, so I'll preempt a lot of your questions as I imagine they may be. Everything we're doing around Linux and around our virtualization component goes back to the community for those components that we're using from the community. Okay, so what does that mean? We find Zen bugs, we give the Zen bugs back to Zen source. Okay, to the Zen.org. Not necessarily, not Zen source, the company we acquired, to Citrix, the proper GPL hypervisor project. Okay, we have people we're paying full-time to work on Zen full-time. Full-time Oracle employees paid just like the other developers in our company. Okay, so when we talk about some of the features of Oracle VM, or in a sense we're talking about the features of Zen on running on top of Linux, but we've also done a number of other things. We've got some integrated tools that are here. We've got, when we say integrated, integrates live migration at no cost. We're obviously you got VMware in the industry, and they obviously do a number of things for certain fees. Some of the motivation for Oracle entering the virtualization market is to make sure that we lower the barrier to entry for Oracle customers as low as we possibly can. Now, I misspoke a little bit, because you don't have to be an Oracle customer to use this. You can be anybody with net access and a brain. Or a brain maybe even optional if you can get it on your machine, for that matter. Anyway, now another reason, why did Oracle come out with our own virtualization offering instead of trying to partner with others? Well, the other leaders in the market have closed source products. In the sense, we want to be able to support the full stack. So if a customer comes to Oracle with a problem, we want to be able to debug that from application layer, database layer, operating system layer, all the way down to the hypervisor. We haven't started making hardware yet. No predictions about any acquisitions or anything like that. It was a joke. Okay, what are the applications that are already certified today on Oracle VM? That's the list. Now, as things happen in Oracle, in software development houses, you have product release cycles. We fully expect every product released by Oracle to be certified in Oracle VM when that new product reaches its next release, next milestone. Okay? You may not be aware, there's something called OBE, Oracle by Example. So if you wanted to go to the web, you can download a pre-configured Oracle VM image that has 11G inside of it and a little script to teach you how to use the features of 11G. Okay? All that is a download for you, pre-configured database, little script to say how to do feature A, how to do feature B. Quite interesting. We used to ship those in VMware. That's no longer the case. Now we ship them in Oracle VM. Okay. I was in Sydney a couple weeks ago. I've been spending a lot of time in Australia. Visited a number of customers. Each of those said they're specifically interested in the advantages that this gives them to get their DBAs and other members of their IT staff up to speed faster on the Oracle technology, which allows them to give more value back to their business. It's pre-configured images. They don't have to worry about doing the installation. They can just download the image and have it work for themselves. Okay. My point by including this slide is just to make sure that we do support non-Oracle applications, and since we allow that to be running, it's not like it's anything limited to Oracle. A lot of people think that when it's anything Oracle, it's only our stack. That's not true. If you want to run something else virtualized on that, happy to have that be the case, and we will support you for bugs, obviously, that are in the hypervisor and the virtualization layer. We're not going to be fixing bugs in your random application. Okay. As I said, it does run Linux underneath, but that's completely shielded to the user. We have a DVD, chuck it in, next, what's your static IP address, what do you want, boom, done. You've got a machine up and running, so you don't have to have Linux knowledge. If you want to start bonding NICs and things under the covers, of course, okay, it's normal Linux, go in, do your magic, okay? As I mentioned, we have pre-configured images. We not only have pre-configured images of 11G, but also of Unbreakable Linux, Oracle's support program. Support all the normal ones. Now, a special note for the techie audience on Windows. We are currently in the process of developing virtual drivers for disk and virtual drivers for network. Due to the paranoid nature of Oracle Legal, I can say they'll be released in calendar year 08. That's as narrow as I can go. As an aside, let's just say they're progressing well. Okay, so that's the two that we're focusing on. What do we exclude from that? Video. Right? We're not a desktop-focused company. We're a server-focused company, so in the data center. Right? So those are the two things we care about, network and disk. Okay. You've got browser-based management control. Oracle has a number of different management products. One of those is specifically for included in Oracle VM. Okay. It is private source. It is not open source because we integrated OC4J and some of the other components that we have in the Oracle suite of products just to get it out the door quite quickly. This was actually announced at Oracle Open World in late last year, October-ish. Okay. I specifically went to the engineering heads to ask questions on this slide to make sure that I could answer the questions that Rusty and crew or whoever may have on what are we contributing, what are we keeping proprietary patches, et cetera. So when we say that we've done optimized Zen technology besides being a marketing slide, right, what we've done is we've actually, these are bugs we found, right? And we fix them and we give that back to Zen. Okay, so it's not like we're not keeping some special set of patch set that's special for us and we're not giving back to the community. When we start doing load testing of 11G and some of those enterprise applications with the loads we know our customers have on top of Zen, it starts to exhibit some special behavior. We fix that special behavior, if you will. I'm sure what these guys in the lab in China are finding as well, they're reporting those back. We have developers, we just fix them and then put the patch back up to upstream. Okay? We've got a number of members of people that are paid, like I said, by Oracle. The thing that I think is most interesting is we have something called Oracle On Demand. If you want to run Oracle and you don't want to install it yourself, you can come to us and we'll run it for you. Okay? That group was having trouble fitting all the servers into the facility that they had. They had outgrown power and cooling. How can they get more into that data center? Virtualization. So the number one customer reference I have, us. Our on-demand service, and we've got a PDF on our website. You can go take a look at what they're doing, why they're doing it, et cetera. Came down to real-world needs. If they have a problem, they go beat on the engineering team to fix their problems. So really, when we say we're doing load testing, it's not just we're doing it in some random lab. No offense, but we're doing it in, this is people that are paying us a fair chunk of change to run their environment. We find bugs, we fix them, and put that upstream in the proper way. Performance testing. So, with the current group, so to get into the details, we did VMware versus Oracle VM, right? Now we all know we can do benchmarks behind the scenes and do some special stuff in slash proc or whatever kind of massive stuff you want. But the Oracle database does a lot of context switching, right? Zen is excellent at context switching. VMware sucks at it. So we came out 3 times ahead. I'll paraphrase the slide for you. That's the realities. Now, again, that's the current or the old version of VM or whatever. I don't keep up with their product releases, but that's the version that was there. So we'll be releasing all that data on the website. That's pretty much what that means, is that we were 3 times less overhead, meaning, you can go from that route. Okay, if you do so choose to call Oracle for support, we've got massive support everywhere. Interesting component there. Okay, I think this is my very last slide. It's very nice from a point of view when you can actually talk about the prices. So under $1,000 for unlimited processors per machine per year, you can put as many virtual machines as that as you think your machine can handle, and we still support you. Okay. As I said, there's no license costs. One call for the complete stack, which again, this is if you want to do virtualization, you want to run Oracle in a virtual machine, you really have an option of one if you want support. This is a pseudo-architectural diagram of, and don't ask me what the acronyms mean because I keep getting different answers inside Oracle, but you can read the PDF if you want to know what's really going on, just more of a slide. This is what actually happened with Oracle On Demand, what they started with, what they went through, and then what they were able to do with virtualization. I think it's also interesting to watch the power go down. That was actually the major issue. The air conditioning was an interesting one, but the power was the bigger issue. And I think the tagline for those guys, we have millions of customers on that. So it's not like we're running just a couple people. Okay. Some of you may be wondering, what is Oracle's licensing policy when it comes to physical machines versus in a virtual instance? We have something called soft partitioning and hard partitioning. So let's say you run Oracle VM and 11G on a machine with 8 processors. With 11G, you pay for 8 processors. Okay. If you run 5 instances of 11G, you're still only paying for 8 processors. It's up to you. Okay. If you do something called hard partitioning, where you've got a DOM U and you assign it 2 CPUs and a hard code, hard lock, if you will, those 2 CPUs, just to that 1 DOM U, you only have to pay for the 2 CPUs instead of the 8 CPUs. Okay. That has been recently published on our website to say exactly how that has to happen. And there's a PDF that says Zen must be configured in these ways for our licensing guys to go, yep, okay, no worries. In the past, it was a bit challenging, from what I understand. I don't know, I've only been with Oracle for a few months, so. That's what we mean by soft and hard partitioning. Okay. You will see more and more customers, channel partners, etc., starting to deploy Oracle in a virtual instance way. As I said, I was in Sydney a couple weeks ago, had a meeting with a partner at a great pub, the Republic of Cross, anyway. Went there, had a chat with him. They were doing I think 13 different instances of Oracle VM for the production environment, and they had that consolidated even further for the DR environment. Okay, this is something that was launched end of last year. Oracle channel partners are already responding to government tenders with this solution. Oracle fully supports them. Obviously, we give them our support from a tender support response as well as from a production call-out support. Okay. Now, here's the idea. We've got something called Oracle Enterprise Manager, and the idea is to be able to manage app updates, database updates, operating system updates, and virtualization updates, all seamlessly in one tool. That's the vision. When we talked to CIOs, did a couple weeks ago in Sydney, this one slide, and she was really excited. Wow, we can do all that with one tool, don't have to worry about all these other, for the Oracle stack, this is all you need. Okay. Last slide. You guys know that. That's why you're in the virtualization miniconf. This is the stuff that's done. One thing I didn't mention yet is that we do what's called, so when you think of a Linux distribution, they do certification. What do? You take a DL380, you take a whatever box from whatever vendor, and they say, yep, the NIC works. Yep, the SCSI card works. Yes, the HBA card works. Check, done. We don't think that's what our customers, Oracle customers, are deploying in production. So we test not only the HBA card, we test the SAN, we test the version of the database that's on there, the version of compatibility, obviously, with the hardware. What do the application need to run on that? We call that validated configurations, where it's everything you need to really deploy something, not just one component of that. And we're obviously extending that to include virtualization as well. When I talk about real-world benefits, that's the stuff for the Oracle On Demand, what we're seeing ourselves running this for our clients. Questions? Great.
Now that we're seeing in the community all like Zen a little bit stand up and KVM raising, do you plan to continue with Zen and Oracle VM or move into KVM?
So what we've done is we purposely don't market our product, I mean, other than to an audience such as this, specifically mentioning Zen. We abstract that away. So if something else, FUBAR, BAS, comes along and it's the best thing since sliced bread, we've built a layer there that allows us to switch that out. No worries. We see that happening already. Now, nothing against Zen, nothing great for any other project, but we want that flexibility in our environment. We've not committed to anything other than Zen at the moment. Clearly, we're investigating them. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
And we have, there's some sort of discussion about whether we'll keep buying massive great RDM boxes to do this.
Yeah, they're very expensive. So we did not do hardware virtualization, the LPARs, compared to software virtualization, which is the Oracle VMS software virtualization. We did software virtualization VMware, VMS ESX server, versus Oracle VM, kind of apples to apples. When you start looking at the big box, then you get into very different discussions. Happy to have that discussion with you. There's clearly some advantages we see as a software company on why you'd be paying to scale up and then slice it into pieces. Use those smaller pieces on much cheaper boxes. So, yeah. Yes, in the back.
Yeah, you talked about your great maintenance tools for configuration and setting up those Oracle VM. And
yep.
Also understand that you're going the direction to a client-based deployment, like downloading your Oracle VM and just putting it there and running it, which is the current trend.
Sure, I understand.
I don't want to touch it, I just want to move this into the VM.
Physical to virtual and then virtual to physical. Yeah, those are features that are planned for the future, absolutely. Those are one of the highest requirements we've heard from customers. So, absolutely, correct. To repeat that, it's not yet in the product, it is planned. Also, one other thing that is a common question I should have covered, real application clusters, rack, is not supported currently in Oracle VM. There's a lot of timing issues when you get into something like a clustered database product and then virtual instances and the time in that. So that's something we did not announce as part of our initial release, and that's something clearly the engineers are very much working on. That was the other high priority question from customers.
For the management stack, are you relying on Red Hat's Redbird or any proprietary solution for Oracle itself?
For the management problems, we have a product called Enterprise Manager. So Libvirt may be what we're using to actually abstract away the KVM, Xen, whatever discussions. That I don't know. I can ask the engineers. But one of my engineers is here, so let's ask him.
Yeah, so the actual management product that ships with VM right now isn't on top of Libvirt. However,
it's on its own.
Yeah, it's on its own. So it's proprietary, using some Oracle components.
OC for J, the thing I said before, that containers. So you look at it two ways. We've got stuff that ships with Oracle VM today for those people who don't have Enterprise Manager, and then people that have Enterprise Manager have the whole Oracle stack and they've done everything Oracle. We want to make sure that they're supported as well. So we kind of have two different options depending on who you are and what your needs are.
It's not necessary to install the Oracle management web interface. You can run your Oracle VM without using normal Xen-based tools.
Yeah, we just think that those people that have that level of skill, you don't need the GUI anyway, you can go do it yourself. However, we're obviously pitching this to people that don't have the command line, XM list, blah, 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 that kind of stuff.